I'm Dustin Zahn, and this is Trainwrecks. Every once in a while, I'm lucky enough to get a legend on the show, and this episode is one of those situations. When I first started DJing and producing, I was into just about everything. I was big on drum and bass, hip-hop was cool, industrial was intriguing, experimental music stood out the most, and it kind of became ingrained in my DNA, even to this day. Still, when it comes to the dance floor, I knew I was looking for something else. Everything I was experiencing at the raves kind of left me looking for more. It was all sort of party-focused, hands in the air, which is fun and great, but I wanted something fucking slamming and mechanical. I wanted something that would cut out all the bullshit and just become so rhythmical that it turned hypnotic. Around 1998, I found what I was looking for. I fired up my little dial-up modem and started searching record shops for European techno. It wasn't long before I was deep down in a rabbit hole of techno coming from cities like Birmingham, Stockholm, Amsterdam, and Naples, Italy. And I'll be honest with you, I stole my mom's credit card and racked up about $100 worth of records. In that box was one of the Napoli techno founders, and he's here today. Today's guest is Gaetano Parisio, a.k.a. Gaetek. Or is it Gaetek? I don't know. I got some due diligence to do on this episode. When I was doing this techno exploration back in my high school days, I didn't even speak any sort of Spanish or anything, so I didn't know about putting the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable. Anyway, he was born in Naples a while back, and around 1997, he stormed onto the global circuit. He started with releases on Primate, Conform, Art, Drum Code, and more. You'd regularly find him alongside all the old school legends like Marco Carolla, Adam Bayer, The Advent, Joel Mull, Ben Sims, and many more. I guess if you're not well versed in 90s and 2000s techno, that last sentence might sound kind of strange to you. But all those guys were making some of the roughest and toughest percussive techno available at that time, and none of them were slouches, that's for sure. Together alongside Marco Carolla, they paved the way for a generation of Italian producers that shared a similar yet uniquely distinct sound. Neapolitan techno, Napoli techno, whatever you want to refer to it as, it was all coming from Naples, and it had roots in percussive Jeff Mills-styled Purpose Maker club rockers. But it went on to embrace their house roots a bit more and became extremely funky peak time party tracks that, well, actually there's a revival and people are playing them all the time today. So if you're under 35 and new to the game, I'm telling you right now, like I just said, most of this funky techno revival that you're hearing is stuff coming from these guys, and they already did it 25 years ago. So if you're into that kind of thing and you're not familiar with these records and you like what Gaetano has to say, please do yourself a favor and go back and check out, you know, the catalog from a lot of the people we're speaking about in this episode. A quick glance here on Discog, he's put in a ton of studio time. I'm counting close to 80 records and countless remixes. I can't even tell you how many of the earlier Gaetano Parisio and Gaetek and Southside Records I have myself. On top of being a highly prolific producer, he was also highly regarded as a killer three-deck DJ. I glanced at the Berghain lineup this weekend just to see what's happening, and I saw Gaetano was playing. Immediately thought, I need him on the show. I have way too many records not to ask. So I texted him, and he was cool as shit about making it happen. Thanks, Gaetano, and for everyone else, enjoy the interview. But first, a few things. Thanks to Aaron V. Notes are up for all the episodes since the relaunch of the podcast. Head to the official site or your favorite streaming platform, minus SoundCloud. And in the description of the episode, you'll find some names, places, topics, and other things mentioned in that particular episode. Also worth mentioning, I have a new record out on my label. It's called Tools for Levitation, and it's something that I wrote with Zippo. It's 5 esoteric, nihilistic-ass club tracks for anybody that's into the weirder, darker side of techno. If you're curious, just head over to Enemy Records on Bandcamp and slide a few bucks our way. Anything is appreciated. Also, guess what? We're 1 week away from the Great Beyond, July 26th to July 28th. It's our three-day campout focused on psychedelic house and techno music. I don't know what else to tell you. You know, we've gathered some of our favorite DJs and our favorite people, and we convinced them to join us out in the middle of nowhere for 3 days straight to get rowdy. It's going to be awesome. One ticket price gets you in the door. Free parking, free camping, free water, free hotel shuttle if you're staying in a hotel instead. We nuked the bugs, so it's pretty mild but for bugs on the weekend. There's baby goats and geese running around. There's a few people where, you know, we're not sure if they're on mushrooms or if they lost a bet. They'll be there too. We have a big-ass sound system for each of the three stages, and spanning 3 days, we have 70-plus acts. Our headliners include Alton Boss, BMG, Centrific, Clariska Kimski, Daniel Bell, Detroit Techno Militia, DJ Fatty, DJ Hyperactive, Dustin Zahn, that's me, GGFM, Lindsay Herbert, Lone Front, Lychee, Jay York, Neil Overland, Polygonia, Rue, Live Set, Rod Hod, Sandrian, Sean J. Wright, Steric, Turnian Sound, and Wada Igarashi, as always. If that sounds like a good time, and I'm telling you it is, head to greatbeyond.us. Is it greatbeyond.us? Pretty sure. Otherwise, just Google Great Beyond Festival and grab tickets. There's less than 100 remaining, so you got to be quick. As far as the bus tickets go from the airport, there's even less. I think there's around 30 of those remaining at the time of this recording. So be quick. I hope to see you there. If not, keep it in mind for next year. That being said, I'll be out in farmland working on the Great Beyond for, you know, the better part of the next 2 weeks. So I'm not sure if there will be any episodes at all. We'll see what happens. I'll post something if not. Otherwise, enough chatter. Let's get on with the episode. Everybody have a good week. Later. All right, Gaetano, welcome to the show.
Really my pleasure to be here. Like, thank you to
no problem.
Invite me.
No problem at all. Hang on 1 second. I'm just going to adjust the volume here. Yeah, so we're sitting outside in Berlin, outside in the courtyard, so you might hear a little jazz music, but we're literally just having some drinks in the courtyard and here to talk about techno and other silly shit.
Happy birthday.
Hey, thank you. It is indeed my birthday today. So this is probably the last time. Actually, no, that's not true. By the end of this, we'll have a couple of drinks. And I will not be fully sober. Anyway, let's jump right into it here. You're from Naples.
Yeah.
And I mean, one thing that I think is like definitely one of the obvious themes of chatting here is like that's where Naples techno is from. You know, depending on where you come from, Napoli techno, Neapolitan, whatever you want to call it. I just kind of want to catch up on maybe a little bit of history from that period, see what you've been up to since then, and see what's up in the future. Is that cool?
Yeah, actually. This all about that, my background, where I coming from. In Naples, first of all, like, you deserve to take a minute to understand a little bit about the city where I born, my birthplace. It's a kind of anarchic city. It's in the south of Italy. And historically, actually, my city was always struggling, you know, like compared to the north side. And like all the depressed area, like, I don't know, back in the day, Detroit, Berlin, we the art was a way to communicate, express something. And when I was 20 years old, you know, they start to bring DJs from outside. And I was lucky enough to party in there. But the difference from with my buddies were that I used to stay behind the DJ booth, just looking how the needles and looking the records spinning, and I was wondering how that sound comes out from the sound system.
Yeah,
and so I immediately start to buy gears, and again I was lucky enough that in that period was a lot, was like a tribe, you know, no more than 200 person involved in this kind of techno scene, and it was kind of contra-culture things.
For sure.
That's why probably I fell in love with that.
Did you feel connected with the counterculture? Like, were you into, I don't know, like Led Zeppelin or something like this? Or what drew you in that has
At that time, it was more Cure, Depeche Mode, New Order, or something like that. Some Orb or Orbital stuff, you know.
So like, already some electronics were
electronic stuff. And then this synergy between persons that were involved built the scene there. So I think this was crucial for our journey, because it was an exchange of energy between different persons. They have certain kind of talent and vision of the things, and that create that kind of magic, you know, like a scene. And another thing is that because geographically Naples was it's really far away from the music that was our reference, like Detroit, Berlin. Let's put it this way: between Naples and Europe, there was like Tuscany, the North Italy, and in that period, it was a big progressive and house scene, and we were pretty far away from not only musically but also geographically. So that's why this kind of limitation, I always say that limitations are gold.
Yeah, for sure.
They force us to create something, for example, labels, and get involved with productions to create, you know, music.
Absolutely. And then at that time, like, you know, it's not like my knowledge about Italy in that time is super strong, but, you know, everybody tossed around names like Lori D and names like that. Were those people that you were going out and seeing, or?
That Lori D was more Rome things. And at that moment, Rome was really involved with Chicago, with the ACV label. So Roberto Armani, other, you know, more Chicago stuff.
Yeah.
Our influence... we get our influence going outside and bringing DJs from outside. And I don't know, at the time was, of course, Jeff Mills, Darren Emerson, Steve Bicknell, that at the time was Cosmic, you know, the Cosmic.
Yeah.
And then it happened that I met Marco
and then Carolla, was
Danilo, and then Reno, and then... I think from that point on, we start to create something that is still, you know.
Of course.
Is still up.
So, yeah, I mean, let's get into it. That kind of catches you up with, like, the early days of this Napoli techno sound here. I guess it's safe to say that maybe you and Marco were, the first couple that were releasing a lot of records out of Naples. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, a lot of those records were super percussive at first. I mean, of course, you both kind of got a little bit more housey in around 2001 or 2 or something. Would you say that was, like, definitely a Jeff Mills influence and stuff like that?
Absolutely. The way it started was kind of sliding doors things. I was playing in a small room of a commercial club. And I was playing, I still remember the records that I was playing was Richie Hawtin Positive Education Remix. And while I was playing, Marco came close to me and say, "Hey, I like what you're playing. I'm trying to do something like that in the studio." And of course, I was playing. I didn't put any attention. But then after the party was over, we met in the parking.
Interesting. And when was this? Roughly 96, 97?
Yeah, no, 95.
Oh, okay, very early.
95. And so we share our telephone number. I still remember 578-0158. Marco, still your telephone. It's the parents' telephone.
Yeah. For...
And so we start to have this friendship relationship. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of fun. We start to, let's say, contaminate and influence each other. And so since then, we always share any single tricks or any single things that we find interesting.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that was kind of percussive things. Yes, because at the time our reference probably was the Purpose Maker series, Jeff Mills series, and also some Advent early stuff. And we are Mediterranean, where we have this latent flavor. So more than that is, I think we create our own sound because there was never any jealousy between us. As I said, we share everything, not girls.
You sure?
No. Well, with Marcus. If I found a compressor, the first thing is pick up the phone and call Marco. And so vice versa, I found this trick routing on the mixer and so on. That's why at that time, then we spun this to the circle get bigger with Reno and Danilo, then David Esquilache back in the day. So we have almost everyone got almost the same gears, the same setup. That's why.
I was going to ask, because I thought like maybe you and Marco were sharing a studio or something, because it had a lot of similar processing, you know, but it makes sense if you're all really transparent about information.
We had two different studios, but mostly any different compressor and stuff, but same routing, you know, than on the studio. Same mixer, same speakers, and same techniques on working on tracks. So
interesting. Yeah, because I mean, you know, I was kind of looking how to get into this, but for my money, when it comes to the late 90s and early 2000s, the internet was obviously around, but it wasn't really a thing yet, like common. So it was much more common for cities to have their own flavor. So I was thinking Naples, Stockholm, Birmingham, you know, places like that, where it was like very obvious that everybody kind of had a similar sound, but somehow each artist was very unique in their own way. You know what I mean?
I think it's really, really important in any genre and form of art to be recognizable, you know, like, and back in the day, whatever. I went in the studio and started to make music, and whatever kind of music I will try to do, the same to make it's the sounds was already there, and that's why I already said that limitations are gold, and sometimes same preset, same compressor setting, same routing, and this is so important, especially right now, because we have so many options, this, like, it's people struggling to find his own
sound. Yeah. And I think if you really refine that, it becomes more obvious.
Yeah,
for sure.
Do you want to go inside?
It looks like it might rain. All right, we're back here. We had a switch inside. It's getting a little rainy. Pardon the jazz. Anyway, we were talking about developing a trademark sound in Naples. I mean, I guess the way I would describe it at first, of course, was like very percussive and driving. And then, like, maybe around the turn of the century, it got pretty funky, right? Like,
yeah,
very house influenced. And I was wondering, like, if you would you say it's the Mediterranean weather?
Yeah, definitely there is some Latin flavor on that. But again, it was kind of spontaneous thing. Again, at that time, probably the only reference back in the day in the middle 90s was the Purpose Maker series. I think then we developed our sound in our own way. Yeah. And as I said before, just because the machines were a big part of our sounds, you know, like we get inspired by machines and we influence ourselves, each other. It was so important to have, at that time we have so many talented producers and DJs all at the same time. And yeah, we found out that we were at a certain, you know, level when the promoters booked DJs and we were just resident. And then we talk our level is it's you know, a really good level. And this at that point, okay, so we are ready to make records. Why we start to make music and labels and producing music? Because I can say this for myself, because for me it was easier to do my own production than find records that match the vision that I had back in the day.
I get it for sure. And then, so I mean, at that point, it was you and Marco, right? And who started putting out records first? I can't remember.
Marco first.
Yeah.
Marco first, about a few months earlier than me. He started his design music records. And then immediately after, I started Conform Records. And then we both start our own series. He started the 1,000. That was limited back then in for 1,000 records. Well, today is a big number for vinyls.
Totally.
But back then it was like really, really limited. And then I start my South Soul and Art. First Art Records and then South Soul. Because
I thought Conform came first.
Huh?
Didn't Conform come first?
Yeah, Conform. Conform was more a platform, so I released other producer. I produced other producers too, but I thought that was I have a need to do my own personal series, because it's like today watching Netflix series, mm-hmm, and you develop a story through episodes. To me, it was the best way, because when you have a vision of something,
it's good. We're just getting some drinks served. It's
okay,
I keep going.
I keep going. Yeah, okay. Whenever we have a strong vision of music, and you want to develop that story, you make music, and in daily basis. And every day you add something. So for me, it was not enough to release on an EP, you know?
Yeah.
And I never release remixes and stuff like that. Just because I have a bright vision of what I want to do. And a single EP was not enough. So the only way was to do it through a series of records. And of course, each release has to belong to each other, as to have this consistency, the sound, the way it sounds, the vibes, and the series to me ends when you cannot add anything to the story and it's over, you know, you let it go.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I was talking to Marco. Man, I mean, I haven't seen him probably in, I think, come on in, that's all right, like probably 12 years. But once upon a time, we were talking actually about your tracks, and he was talking about how you have so many unreleased tracks, but some were like, let's say, different versions of a similar track, which is actually normal. But I mean, it's so it sounds like the story of like you want to really chase something until you find
the ending, like you said, and then pick the best ones. How did you manage? What made you decide what was the best ones?
Again, first of all, after so, this is correct, Marco. Let me tell you a true story. I have hundreds and hundreds of tracks on my own. That's, and I was forced to record the tracks. And this is again the third time I say limitations are gold, because back in the day when I switch on the studio and I jump in the studio and I spend like 9-10 hours in the studio, I always be a really bad student. I never read a manual or something, so I couldn't save any sample anything. So once I switch off the studio, the day after I lost everything. So I was forced to record on that.
Okay.
At the end of the day,
which this was actually typical, like because with computers you could save files forever, but when you had gear, especially, like, you have to record it in a desk. Like, you can't go back and make edits necessarily.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, I never save any because I was not able to save it. I was, you know, so lazy that I never studied how to save sample and stuff like that. I recorded hundreds of tracks that I never released. Actually, I could make other two labels, catalogs, you know. The way I choose the tracks, I don't know, was kind of instinctive things. For sure, all the tracks belongs in the single EP belongs to the same period. Because I also think that when you, right now, the problem is when you start the track and you have the possibility to save the project and keep working the next day. By the way, your mood is already changed. You're already a different person, and I think these things has to be done as soon as your creative part follow down. You have to record it. Doesn't matter if there are some mistakes. I think mistakes are gold. No mistakes, imperfections. Because life is not perfect the way it is. We are not perfect, and these it's a mirror of everything. And today, because everything is so perfect, you want to reach the perfection. Probably you want to keep working on something, and your ego is your biggest enemy that you can have, you know, and you have to let it go. And the sentence is that I like is much better and imperfect tracks than something that doesn't exist at all. Because again, from my own experience, because I was forced to record, after that I quit for more than 13 years, I found all my music on my dad. And if I was not forced to do that right now, I couldn't, I was not able to release all my...
The previous stuff.
Yeah. You know, and... Again, it's so important finish things and then proceed to...
Absolutely. So, I mean, according to your discog, it says that your first record came out around 97. Uh-oh, what do we got here? Oh, my God. Yeah, I'll take a little snack. Why not? Oh, man, this all looks good. I'm going to try this guy. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Yeah, so according to Discogs, you got your first records out.
Sorry again.
Discogs, the website?
Discogs, sorry.
Yeah. So it says that 97 was your first record. Yeah, I think on Primate. I don't know if that's accurate or not.
I think it's on Marco label, design number 5.
Okay. So that Primate Conform.
Yes, exactly.
Looking back at it, you know, in that first 4 or 5 year period, you released a ton of records.
Yeah.
And still you're like, oh man, I got hundreds of other tracks. I can start new labels. But was there a record in that like sort of 97 to 2003 period or a couple where you can look back now that it's 2024 and be like, I'm pretty proud of that record. Like that's one of the ones that you were.
I'm pretty proud.
Yeah.
Well, I really like the comfort number three that I made with Marco, together with Marco.
Was that C&G South System?
Yes. And because there is, a story behind how we made the records and...
Are you comfortable with telling it or no?
Huh?
Are you comfortable to tell it or no?
Well, it's, yes. It's not, it's about a friendship. Okay. Story, you know, like we were two young kids that love to hanging out together and have a lot of fun. Marco is together with Danilo, is the only one probably that I'm in the studio with, he came my studio. We made that records in my studio, and we spent all the day together. And we have so much memories about that day, because it was so really, really fun. And the records were made like in 1 hour and a half, something like that. Like really, and I still have like loop unreleased from that that day.
So, is that the record with Duel on it, or was that a later one?
Sorry?
Was that the record with the track Duel on it, or was that...
Duel, yeah.
Man, that track is still...
Yeah, that one.
It's like so minimalistic, sort of Rob Hood, but
yeah.
Italian in a way.
And the funny thing is I lost the...
The master?
The sound module was a Roland, that was a Roland 2080. I don't know where is it, my original one. And I remember the preset that we use. So 3 years ago, I bought the Roland just for that preset.
Shit.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, it's just perfect. That's all there is to it. So, I mean, that's a good choice, I got to say. So, I mean, at that point, you guys, like you and Marco especially, were really thick as thieves for a while, like just... fucking the power duo. And then eventually Danilo Vigorito, who also
he's amazing talent too. He was an amazing talent.
Yeah, incredible. I mean, is he still around or?
Yes, Danilo, I talked to him like 6 months ago, because it's a funny thing to say. I was because for a preset. Because back in the day, I have this effect called Sony V77, and it's kind of rare. Nobody, really use it that back in the day. But we all have this effect, and so I was looking from a used one, and mm-hmm. I saw an announce from Naples.
Amazing.
I opened the picture and I saw Danilo picture on it. And I called him, and we are in touch with him. Now, right now he's making music, sometimes mastering, but now he's really focused on Dolby Atmos for cinema, soundtracks. Okay.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So, I mean, all right, there's a lot of younger people that listen to the show. So I guess for starters, I should really talk about, we've been talking about Neapolitan Techno, you and Marco especially. But after that, you got, and correct me if I'm wrong, especially on the names, how I pronounce them, because I'm American. But like you and Marco, Danilo Vigorito for sure, Rino Cerrone.
Rino Cerrone.
Yeah. Mark Antonio, David Squillaci.
David Squillaci, yeah.
There you go. So, and to like some honorary degree, Stanley Franzen, right? G-Force?
Yes.
Yeah, who's Belgian. But that kind of seemed to be like a lot of the people at that time that were really emerging and doing stuff, at least in the south of Italy. Because you're right, and Rome and everything north was almost a different world, it seems like.
Totally different.
Yeah. You know, you had like
different vibe, different world, different club culture. Totally, that's why, as I say earlier, like we felt so far away from our reference that was Berlin and Detroit and states. So
I was curious about that. I was going to rephrase it another way, but one thing I was interested about is like, because you have like, you know, all those group of at the time kids, which were like total badasses when you're young coming up. Of course, anytime there's young people that are doing cool shit, some of the older guys get a little pissed off. So did you feel like, in a way, it was almost like Napoli versus Rome or anything like, or not that you had a competition, but did you feel like they were not happy with you, or are they very willing to, were they excited about it? Or
no, to be honest, I never talked about this and never felt something about this. We were really focused on ourselves. We were so super focused on what we have to develop, you know. It was something that at the end, it was not a competition, because but it was a competition, if I can use this word, with ourselves, you know. Because we've been lucky enough that in the same place, at the same time, there were so many talented persons focused on the same direction. That created the magic, you know. And if after almost 30 years we are still talking about this, it just because of that. Because you can be the most talented DJs and producer, but I think the magic happen when there are a synergy between more artists that push in the same direction, you know?
Absolutely.
You have to be lucky enough to be in the right place in the right at the right time. And also, it happened that was a completely different moment. It's not, there is no socials, there is no, it was nothing. It was just, again, like kind of counterculture things, you know.
Yeah.
And no jealousy, because it was a pleasure when for us to see if one of us succeed on something. And I remember. Arino faces, Marco faces, Danilo faces when came my studio and I let listen to my track. You notice if, you know, they are happy for you. They give you like a compliment from the bottom of their heart. And yeah, this is all about that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like obviously because of my connection to Drum Code and everything, I have a strong connection to Stockholm, and getting to know all those guys over the last 20 years or something.
Sweden wasn't the other, probably was the most similar scene to Naples.
That's where I'm going with this. Did you feel like there was a connection between Stockholm and Naples?
Absolutely. Because, yeah, now you talk that you, yeah, Stockholm, actually, Sweden was really something, the closest things to Naples. Because it was not Berlin, it was not Detroit. And they developed their own sound with their own label. And we immediately had this great relation with all the producers. Adam, Joey Mule, Kari, of course, Kari Lekebusch. Mm-hmm. At that time was Thomas Krom. So many talent there. So many talents. Jasper Dahlbeck. Alexi Delano, yes, such, and those guys are so lovely. Like each, I know a lot of them, and I hang out with them, had fun, and I really felt that they it was something really, really similar and close. So of course, was this similarity led us to get in touch and start relationship. So I released together with Mark and by myself on Drum Code on early numbers, you mm-hmm. know. I spent holidays with sometimes with Joy Mool, or I don't know. This is like Every time that we met at some festival, we're hanging out together. Yeah. You know, like, yeah, those guys are.
You want to know something funny? You were talking about releasing on Drum Code. Number 19 you released. I stole my mom's credit card to buy that record.
You would, yeah? What?
I stole my mom's credit card to buy that record.
Come on. You stole your... Yeah. It's good. Good. Well done. Are you listening to it?
It worked out. It was for the best. So, yeah, I mean, that's awesome. Like, you definitely... You're definitely right. They would say the same thing about the stories. Like, there was a connection, of course, like Adam and Marco did records together on Zenit or whatever, and also on Drum Codes. There's a lot.
It happens, almost the same things in Stockholm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And again, why the magic happened when there are so many talented person, producer, in the right moment, the same thing. It happened, the same things there.
It's crazy, right?
It's crazy, yeah. And if you see the things like Sweden, they are like Naples. It's pretty far away geographically from you know, the rest of Europe. So they were forced to run labels and do their music.
Yeah. It's interesting because, like, I mean, the Swedish techno, there's a lot of variations to it. You've released, like, Adam on... Conform, for example, and that was like the Lost and Found was like one of his darkest, hardest records, in my opinion, next like Protection. But like, even a lot of that stuff, especially with Joel, you have this like sort of Stockholm soul melodic vibe to it,
yeah,
which was super similar to the sound in Naples, but also like, I don't know, my music theory isn't good enough, not in minor keys, but just something a little bit like the wintertime versus the summertime, same sort of warm feeling,
you know.
So, you know, one of the things about the fact that you're part of inventing, you could say, the Naples sound or whatever is due, in fact, to your labels, which you have around four of them, I think. You have Art, Conform, South Soul, and
Adagio.
Adagio. I butchered that one. Let's kind of break it down for people right now who are younger and don't know it. You know, like, let's start with Art, for example. Just go alphabetically. What was Art for you?
Art, it was advanced techno research. Actually, I think that I'm still convinced that techno is about research. You know, it's to me, it's about like to find through minimal vibes and environments like something to develop something different through frequencies, and you don't want to get stuck in the same pattern, you know. And art like South Soul, as I mentioned earlier, they born because my need to do my own series. Art was really straight techno, raw techno. And South Soul was, if not the first, but one of the first crossover label or series at the point. I don't even call it label, but it's a sub-label, you know, like, yeah. Between techno and house. And because you already mentioned that our kind of music, our kind of techno was kind of funky, what I did is like... go a little bit slow down with the BPM use 80s, 70s sampling mm-hmm. Samples, and I was really in that mood in that period using my Akai. And so again, like, it started for fun, and then I said, this is something that I really enjoyed to do it. So I start the label. It's something that I'm kind of proud of what I did with South Soul. Also because I found out that a lot of U.S. house legend used to play that kind of record. And yeah, it was good And it was really surprised me that DJs from completely different culture and background would play my production back in the day. So
totally. I mean, I remember, you know, at first you were, when I first got on board, you were already doing the Conform and Drum Code and stuff like that. Then Conform was really banging it out for a minute. You had like the Advent double pack and stuff, which I still absolutely love. Which, by the way, if anybody is interested in this, you re-released the whole catalog.
Yeah, it's on Bandcamp.
I want to talk about that later. But and then you got into South Soul, and then you're like, oh shit, it's him in house mode. It's like real funky, almost like filter house.
Yeah.
But in like a swanky way.
Yeah.
And the thing that I just realized is like, you know, it doesn't matter what the people think about the music. When you picked up a record from basically Art, well, Art was a little bit more simplified with the sleeve, but like Conform, South Soul, and Zenit, like the packaging was like top quality because a lot of dance music was just made as cheap as possible because they're just fucking firing it out.
Yeah.
But you guys always, you had the packaging. You're like, man, someday I wish I could have something as polished as this. You know what I mean?
First of all, was having an idea behind, you know, also. Because they were serious, also the covers were kind of the same outside, but you have to find something that led them to be recognizable. So what really matters was the quality of the cut that we use Nils at Exchange,
yeah,
and Simon. Because, again, what... The most important thing is that when you put the needle on the record, it's so important that since the first beats, you understand where that record comes from. And I always used to make this, the Hitchcock, you know? When you watch his, any of his movie, you immediately... recognize, understand that is Hitchcock movie.
Yeah.
Whatever he filmed.
It's got that sound.
He always used that filter, that way to film the things. And another beer, please.
I got some here. I'm good to go. Thank you. Hitchcock trademark sound every time you see.
Yeah, it. Yeah, exactly. And so Alexander R. Picasso, you see like Picasso masterpiece, and you understand that this is Picasso. I'm not comparing myself to Hitchcock or to Picasso, but just to understand that be recognizable through your own sound. I think is really for me is. One of the most important things that you can achieve. And this is crazy because back in the day, we use a really, class B drivers and our equipment. And we were dreaming, just imagine if you can have class A machines.
Yeah.
And now I feel that I need to downgrade my quality shit, to achieve that. So it's
true story, man. 100%. I mean, I feel the same way. I don't know if you know, but my studio got robbed like 2 years ago and I lost everything.
Now I remember. Yeah. I saw your post. Yeah.
Anyway, like long story short, there was a GoFundMe. Thank you to everybody who donated. It was awesome. I got to restart. And I definitely got some nice shit, don't get me wrong, but like I kind of thought about it for a minute. I was like, well, maybe like trying to get the nicest stuff isn't the answer here. Just getting the stuff that's simple and has that certain sound quality and whatnot.
Yeah.
So actually, I mean, like one question I had in here is like, I really wanted to know kind of what the typical stereo setup was on those tracks back in the day. I didn't mean to derail your thought. But...
Stereo setup.
Sorry, studio setup.
Studio setup. The mixer was a Mackie 32-8, but the American one, not the early version. Akai 3000 XL, and then 909 808 FX was and Sonic DP4, then kind of like a couple of Lexicon PMC 60, and MPX one, something like that. And then the Sony V77, like again as effect and compressor, Traumer compressor. I have an old 241. Drummer valve compressor was 1961, and a tube EQ from Drummer, the 1969. And but this is not the, those are just part of the story. It's not what, but how, because our setup was kind of crazy, really. And we were doing parallel compressor. How do you call it? Downside mixing, something like that. I don't know. This is not the precise. But actually, what we were doing is we had 8 bus, and for example, we have always used the plural, but because we share the same tricks, that's fine. So, for example, drums, we get all the drums out from a compressor, and then from the compressor it didn't return to returns, but to other stereo channels, for example 31 and 32. And we are not happy enough. Again, those 31 and 32, again we didn't go out to the main mixer, but again to another compressor. They come back again to the mixer, you know.
Wow.
And okay. The same things happen for the effect, and we EQ each time the return of the compressor on the mixer, with of course some saturation added.
Yeah, were you just cranking up the overdrive on the Mackie?
No, not that much, because at that point, because there were so many, was overdrive to the compressor, overdrive to already to the single channel, and then back to, so adding and adding saturation and frequencies that create that, you know, that the kind of things, and same things for the effect.
Yeah,
you know, so the aux of the effect go to the effect, but it returns again to a single channel, no, a stereo channel to two mono channel, left and right, to the mixer, and then back to the compressor. So yeah. This was like, you know, like
there's a lot going on.
A lot, because we I spent probably back in the 40 minutes to make a loop, and 6 hours to
really route it and get it to
route the EQs, like get that glue. That's why it was impossible to even right now to send stems separate parts, and when it was done, you know, when at the end of the day you have to switch off the electricity,
yeah,
there's no fucking way to get back, so I was forced to record it.
I mean, that's awesome. Like, it's crazy. I thought you were just going to mention, like, two machines tops, and that was it. But that's a pretty expensive.
No. It was intense routing. Yeah, definitely.
Damn. And that was pretty much all you guys were doing a similar way, but then just approaching.
Yeah, me and Marco, yes. Yeah. Me and Marco, yes.
Incredible. And then, did at any point you end up switching over to the computer and just doing it that way, or?
Computer, what do you mean? Sorry.
The computer, did you ever write music on the computer, or was it always on gear?
No, I mean, the computer, we used to computer Logic back in the day just to have a for loop MIDI.
Okay.
Loop.
So that's what you're doing sequences with, was on the computer and sending it?
No,
to
but there is no like sequences. We wrote just few notes on four bars things,
yeah.
And then everything was like, you know, a pianist, like the sequence was our hands on the mixer to switch on and off the channel,
the mute and all
the that. Mute, exactly, mute the channels, that's it, there's nothing right, there was no arrangement.
Wow, that's insane. Because I was wondering, like, because like you said, you made a million tracks or something and you have all these sequences, And I mean, your sequences were pretty simple, but I didn't know if you were using like a dope fur or something, but
no, absolutely. And just
punching buttons in.
Just, you know. Yeah. Open the, you know, EQs or sends or stuff like that. This or this.
Crazy. Well, thanks for going deep on that. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, like, I had other studio questions, but you kind of nailed it all. So I could say, well, here's one that I usually ask the people on the show. Like, when you go into the studio, would you go in with an idea and just focus on that idea, or would you just go in and start hitting buttons until something sounded cool?
To be honest, when I go into the studio, I really don't know what's going on. Let me explain. Sometimes I'm in the studio just to learn, improve myself, find a different routing, experiment with machines without even trying to make music. And sometimes through this process of experiment routing and stuff like that, if I send some things, you know, make sense, maybe, let's keep working on that. Sometimes I go in the studio and, you know, if I'm in the middle of, let's say, a series, something that tracks that I found a good setup or something like that, and I want, or sounds or a mood that I want to develop, I start from already that point. Okay. But what is really important to me, that every time that I go in the studio, the moment that I switch on the machines, the sounds has to be already there. So I don't want to spend time on fine things. Doesn't matter what. This is because the first 40, 50 minutes, this is the most crucial and important for creativity. Then it go down slowly and, you know, you're going to lose your flow. No? So, yeah, it's how it works, more or less. I would.
I totally agree, especially like that period. For a while, there was where my knowledge was getting ahead musically, but my studio, like the technology, I couldn't figure out. So then you're sitting there, why the fuck doesn't this machine work? And then you lose it. So you're right. Like after 10, 15 minutes, it's gone. So you need to go in and just be able to start, you know, capture that energy that's going on in that brain of yours.
Yeah, to be fast. That's why when you have certain routing, again, you don't touch it. Even a preset, or as I said, like compressor setup, or that, you wanna leave the way they are. You start to make music, and then whatever it comes from is already there. The sound is there, and then it's up to you to, you know, make the music.
Absolutely. So, you know, we were talking about your labels and everything. Of course, I just sped past it here. Like I said, in recent years, you remastered the whole Conform catalog, which I think is a badass move, by the way. Like, I know that a lot of people don't do it because either they don't care about their old music or it's expensive or pointless. But, like, I think for people that can swing it, it's really cool for their legacy to be like, okay, here's revisiting it. So hats off to that.
Thank you.
Before I go further, do you have any intentions of doing that for like Conform or South Soul or anything? Yeah.
Actually, the first one was Conform, and then I want to release the art back catalog at the end, before the end of this year. There's going to be 10 numbers. Actually, I'm in the process to finish the remastering things, to remaster everything. I'm going to do by myself. Probably the next step, again, it will be the South Soul things. But South Soul, because the nature of South Soul, that's a different project. And the idea is the first time that I'm talking about this. Probably the idea is to involve house legends, you know, revisit the stuff like I did with Comfort. But more with the housey and the housey stuff. let's see, I'm really, really slow. I define myself an artisan. I open the door when I feel like, you know, and these bad things for everyone that is involved with me.
I get it. I mean, well, but you did release Fragments 2930 a couple years ago, I guess, on Conform.
Which the last release after 13 years. So you see, like, don't match the standard each release, one release every 2 weeks. I'm really bad.
But, I mean, it was cool. Do you foresee yourself doing more stuff, or do you want to focus more again, like you said, on South Soul and getting that?
No. Someone defined me a quality Nazi. Means okay. What they said is like in the good way that I'm so critical with myself about the quality of the sound and for me it's really important more to I'm talking about Conform too. I receive a lot of demo, and I'm not only I can play a lot of tracks that I receive, but they and I just love it, but I can't release on Conform because first doesn't match. They don't match the sounds, you know, and I release only 24 releases in 28 years, and there are only 4 or 5 artists on that. So, and then I see, I'm really focused on the, more than on music and the tracks that they receive, on the profile of the artists, on the way, because when I find an artist, I'm pretty sure that I found the source.
Yeah.
So I'm sure, at that point, I started a relationship with him. And if he achieved, was able to do it once, he can do it again.
Yeah.
And to me, in this way, I'm more focused on the person, the artist, than on the music.
I get it, for sure. I mean, that's the classic, well, I wanted to say the classic way of doing A&R for a label, but I mean, it's still true because the person is going to determine whether they can make the same records in 5 years, 10 years.
I need the source, not the music itself. Yeah, exactly. The quote.
Absolutely. Seems like it's getting a little rowdy in here before the game. That's okay. So yeah, I mean, like, I could honestly go on for hours asking all this nerdy questions because I just bought so many fucking records from like, all you guys back in the day. But perhaps another time. But let's
with my pleasure, actually.
Yeah, it's fun to hang out.
To me, it's a privilege to, you know, like having someone we're doing this podcast, but actually it's like a conversation, and find someone that has your same passion, same experience, a similar experience, and it's a privilege. You don't feel alone. Yeah, in this world, you know.
I mean, there's a lot of people who loved all your records over the years. So
you don't feel alone.
Totally identify. We've been recording for a bit now, and I had a couple glasses of wine. Time to take a piss soon, but we'll talk about a few fun questions and call it a one. Starting off kind of easy, like, would you say like you're goal driven, or you just kind of roll with whatever happens?
Take it as it comes. No, the thing is, it is. Well, this is like maybe the most important. It's about the relationship that you have with the most important things in your life. A passion. Because passion, when you spend time to doing something that you like most, is the only, there's no family, no kids, no girls. Like, there is the only self-loving act moment that you're doing, like, you know, and this is so important. So it's really an intimate relationship. When I start make music, it was for fun. It was I didn't have any clue. I was a kid, you know, and then at a certain point it happened that I realized that people liked what I was doing, but if not, I continue to do whatever I like most, because it's everything. It's self-loving. It's and to cheat on that, it's the most, it's a crime. It's like, I don't know, it's having the most beautiful, intelligent girl that loves you, and you cheated her. You're crazy, because you're looking for something different. Then again, it's something that let me spend time with myself, without anyone, with my machines, with my inner voice, that sometimes is good to switch off. And I am so grateful to my machines. It's all about the inner side of the circle. It's me and my studio and my vision and things. And then this is the outside from the circle. And this, there are two completely words. I need feedback from inside. And there are person, there's nothing wrong, that needs feedback from outside. That's why probably there is performers and artists, you know, this is like, yeah, nothing wrong. There are two different sports, but it's like, and to me, again, it happened, and after 30 years, I'm still here talking about music. I could never imagine back in the day.
Yeah.
Never.
I mean, if you told me when I was 18, when I was just getting into your records, that I'd be sitting here talking to you about it at 40, I'd be like, bullshit. You know,
absolutely, so, bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm still here.
You took a little break, though.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Was there a particular reason why you took the time off? Were you just not feeling it, or you felt you had to chase something else? Or
in music?
Yeah.
No, there is no reason. No, there's like really maybe some physiological things, but like, to be honest, like I spend every day, almost every day, in the studio, since early in the morning till the end of the day, just a few breaks. And now I have kids, and sometimes, you know, it's good that appear and, you know, be a present, because, you know, it's another privilege of that, but...
Totally.
Yeah.
In that process, as far as I know, the last I heard, you were still living in Barcelona, right?
Yeah.
So I guess my question is, who's got the best food, Spain or Italy? It's very different.
No, it is. Of course, that Spain, you know what? I think that Italian culinary food tradition, it's so strong.
Yeah.
Same things with happen in French. But Spain, because they are Mediterranean and they don't have really a strong history, they get the best. So they are free to develop new things, get the same amazing ingredients, because it's based on Mediterranean, plus they have some gems from ocean.
Yeah.
And they are free to develop new things.
Absolutely, it's true.
So,
I mean, I remember back in the day, you had El Bulli, you know, they were doing, crazy shit. Adria. You know, I think they were the ones that invented doing things with foam and deconstructed fucking, I don't know, French toast or whatever.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean,
but they had the freedom to develop things.
Absolutely.
In Italy, because our tradition, the strong culture and tradition, we don't have that freedom, and freedom leads you to...
Well, Italy has the freedom. They're just so obsessed with tradition. I love tradition. I mean, of course, I've been to Italy a million times.
You start to be slave by your own history.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
That's like also the music and everything. Like,
I mean, there are now people in Italy who are younger generations, which are really trying to modernize the cuisine a bit. And of course, like I was saying earlier, the older Italian chefs are like, this is bullshit, you can't do this. And I mean, listen, I love tradition. I don't think there should be a fucking sushi burrito.
Sushi burrito.
Yeah, that's America for you. But at the same time, like, if it tastes good,
Does it exist?
Hell yeah. I never had one, but you know. I mean, it's the same thing. In Italy, you have these combinations where you're like, never in a million years.
Yeah,
but,
like put pineapple on the pizza. I
mean, yeah. There you go. My girlfriend definitely loves pineapple on the pizza. So. But, you know, the thing that I always saw when I was going for gigs, because I used to play like maybe 30 times a year in Italy.
Oh, well,
during the
much more than me. Much more. I'm really, really bad.
Yeah. So
never be lucky.
I've been all over. But the one thing I was always jealous of that I didn't have was with, like, for the little kids, they would put the French fries on the pizza. I'm American.
I can't let you go.
That's it. We're done there. How should you drink limoncello the best way?
Ah, limoncello. Well, there's one way to drink, only enjoy it. It's so short. It's up to you.
That was actually from Joel. So.
Do you know what? Limoncello is really from, it was born in Sorrento. It's really close to Naples. It's 40 minutes from Naples because there they grow like the best lemons ever. But I'm more on grappa. So when I finish the drink,
what's your preference then? Amaretto or limoncello or grappa or
no grappa.
Grappa. Yeah, that's your jam.
Yeah,
right on. I think I like amaro, but it turns out I'll drink whatever. I don't give a shit. What's your go-to cocktail? What's your like favorite cocktail? Like the easy
cocktail.
One?
Moscow Mule.
Moscow Mule. Interesting choice. Yeah. Nice. I mean, these days I keep it easy of vodka soda because calories and hangovers. You know what I'm saying? What about the best pizza in Naples?
Well, Pizza da Michele. It's a margherita. It's a classic. Or marinara. This is like... my personal one is now... I call it pizza lumbro. When you call it in an Italian restaurant, Italian pizzeria, and you ask for a pizza, if the... the pizzaiolo, the pizza maker, is in Italian or maybe in Napoli. He understand all'ombra. All'ombra, it means translate is on the shadow. It means less tomato. So my my first pick is all'ombra con provola, pepe scagli di parmigiano. It means with less tomato, with the smoked cheese. Yeah, smoked cheese.
Scamorza?
Provola.
Provola, okay.
Pepper and scaglie di parmigiano. It's parmesan, but with...
slices?
The slices on
them. Okay. Yeah, man, I'm going to listen back to that later because I want to try it, but you spit that Italian out so fast I can't remember. Sounds good. I mean, for me, it's funny, whenever we go to try new pizza places, I always get the margherita bufalina here because, like, you have to add the buffalo mozzarella and
extra. Be sure that the right ingredients.
Yeah. Anyway, and people laugh at me, but I'm like, listen, if they can get this right, then the rest of the menu will be fine. Like, I feel that way about everything. Pad Thai in Thailand, burgers in America. Like, if you can't get the staple right, then fuck off.
Great. I got it.
I got a friend that is going to Naples next month on vacation. What's the best beach around there to hit up?
In Naples, probably you want to go to Capri or Ischia. It's like just 30 minutes, 40 minutes by ferry. And there are two amazing islands. One is a volcanic one, Ischia, and the other one is like, you know, Dolomiti rocks? It seems to have a part of the Dolomiti mountains on that come out from the sea, and where the Roman ancient Roman imperatori, come si dice, kings or used to make their own holidays there. They were not stupid, so there are two amazing islands.
Sounds good to me, man. I mean, like, it sounds like, especially with coming out of the water and stuff, just looks fucking beautiful. So we're going to wrap it up soon here, but, like, you're in town tonight. You're playing at Berghain later.
Well, tomorrow. Tonight, tomorrow, I'm going to celebrate you.
That's right.
Let's challenge it. So that's why I don't know if I will be able to play tomorrow at Berghain. Because your birthday.
Well, if it gets fucked up, it's clearly not my fault. All right, it's been one of those days, man. We weathered a rainstorm outside. We moved it inside. We had a power outage, which was strange. I think it's really cool that, like, you know, listening back to your Reclaim Your City mix that came out recently, that you're kind of keeping your finger on the pulse with this sort of tracky, cool, pure sort of techno style.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of people, it's hard to keep up with it or stay in the know, and you seem to be doing it, which is great.
You know what? The good thing is digging on music, I found a lot of new talent artists, and a lot of them are doing like really good stuff. And that gives me optimism.
Yeah.
And so I thank them, because we need kind of optimism, because there is a new generation there are focused on quality stuff more than, you know, the shortcuts and stuff like that. So to me, it's a pleasure. Then the way I build up my mix is it's about a mood. I always say that this is not what about how you play it. And that's why most of the time I don't play my stuff on mixes, because when the track itself has to be to service the set, the mix, and not vice versa. So if I know how the track is built, is done, for example, my own tracks, my state of flow immediately stop, because I know there is a break or there is something, you know, that I know. So it's better to don't know really well the tracks that you're playing. Yeah. Actually, I'm sharing something. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of my weakness maybe is, you know, I have really fucked up memory.
Yeah.
I really, really bad memories. So most of the time, I don't know really what I'm playing, you know.
But you feel that you know it'll be good.
Exactly. And it's like adjust things, you know, like this is a plus, because I completely disconnect to the structure of the track and I play fluidly. So without really focus on the track itself, but more on the mix that I'm playing. Because the way I mix is, it's quite fast, always with, you know, back then they play with 3 turntables, and, you know, and now this is a continuous mix. There is never one track to play by himself. So it's kind of to create things.
It's live, right?
It is live. And I'm really struggling, for example, to play with just 2 CDJs or 2 turntables. I'm really struggling.
Yeah.
Because when a track is over, there is already 2 tracks on it, and so on. But if you know the structure of the track, you set the flow. Subconsciously, is already gone. You know, like you think, okay, I have to wait. There is something, and so my freedom is already lost.
Of course, yeah. Allows you to really act with instinct, let's say.
It's just a weapon, is something on service to the main things that is a mix. For probably sure. Some tracks match better than others, but I don't know. I'm curious, you know, at this time, absolutely. I don't know what's going to happen next.
But people feel that. They get, you know, I noticed that, like I played a set recently where I wasn't really feeling it, to be completely honest. And then you kind of know the break is coming. You see it on the CDJ, so you kind of wait. And it was fine, but I could feel that they also felt that it was like I was waiting for something. Whereas like when you're really in it, or maybe you had a couple drinks and you're just rocking out, and you're like, I don't give a shit if this came in on the third measure, you know? And people,
absolutely, you know, absolutely. You know, the thing is, as I said, like, in the real, now it's 2 hours ago that I, almost 2 hours ago that I say, when perfection doesn't exist, there is something that you play, whatever, and it's a mood, yeah, the way you play the things. And then we talk at the end of the 2 hours, 3 hours set, 4 hours set.
Exactly. Awesome, man. Well, it's been a pleasure. Like I said, I could keep going, but I got to get out of here. I got a little birthday dinner to do.
Let's say a little bit more.
Yeah. We'll just come back afterwards. So.
No, really. I want to thank you because it's to me, it's a privilege and a pleasure to... I want to thank you because for me, it's not only a pleasure, but a privilege to be interviewed by you. I have huge respect on what
well, thank you very much.
And again, talking to someone that speaks your same language, well, in this case, not English, because my one is really sucks, but I mean, answering a question that makes sense is not happening all the time, and is really have a conversation with someone that he got his own my same passion and my same love knowledge of it. So I thank you.
Hey, thank you very much, man. See you tomorrow too. Hurricane. So
I try to be there.
Yeah. Have a good one.
Ciao.